Hey, Marvel Maniacs, welcome to another exciting episode of Guardians of the MCU. This is episode number 188. We're recording this on September 28th, 2021. Just a reminder, Guardians of the MCU is part of the Random Chatter Network. Please do check us out at randomchatter.com for information on all of our shows, membership through Patreon, access to the Escape Hatch Discord channel, and show merchandise from TeePublic. A few nights ago, I had a really weird dream that someone was trying to get me to do the intro of Guardians of the MCU in a bar. Really just weird. John, I think I texted that too. Yeah, like, I don't remember anything else from the dream. I don't even remember what else I texted you. But like, that's one thing that's kind of stayed in my head. Really weird, really weird. So yeah. Hey, I'm Tim. We have John, we have Sheba. How are you guys tonight?
I'm good. My voice, I think I've been losing it going back to school. So it's a little hoarse. I'll apologize. You know, not a big enough horse for me to ride, but it's a little horse.
You know, and I was going to make a horse joke, so you already got me there. You're one step ahead of me. And John, yourself?
I'm good. And Tim, all you said was someone in the bar recognized your voice and was trying to get me to do my intro to Guardians.
Ah, okay.
So that's all I've got on your dream of infamy.
Yeah, really weird. All right, you know, not a lot of news tonight, but I think some things that will give us a little bit of discussion. And then we do have a profile coming up on this week's second episode. So with that, folks, I believe we will jump to it on to our news.
So Shang-Chi continues to be number one domestic box office spot, reaching nearly 200 million and surpassing Black Widow as the highest grossing film of the year.
Very cool.
Which is absolutely awesome. I love that we're supporting this Shang-Chi because it really deserves all the support. So I'm happy to see that there.
Now, when we talk domestic box office, that's both U.S. and Canada, right? Like, you guys get pulled into what is generally deemed the U.S. domestic box office, I believe.
That could be correct, but I never know, because usually with Canada, they're like, the U.S. will be like, yes, we'll include you. And then when it's convenient, won't include them. So I'm not really sure if this is one of the will conveniently include you case. I can't remember.
It's pretty much so, you know, I mean, listeners know that I live in upstate New York. And when you live in New York State, there's two New Yorks. There's New York State and there's New York City. And whenever you say New York anyone who lives outside of New York, they're like, oh, I love the city. And I'm like, I don't live there. I'm closer to like Montreal than I am New York City.
Right.
So, you know,
you're almost closer to DC than New York City.
Oddly enough, upstate New York is to New York City as Canada is to the United States. That's kind of the thing. Like, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. Yeah. John, what's next?
So some news on the Eternals. It is expected to run approximately 2 hours and 36 minutes, which would make it the second longest film in the MCU. Endgame number one at 3 hours and 1 minute, because they just needed to tick over that 3 hours mark for us.
Yeah.
We won't know confirmation on runtime until tickets go on sale. Mm-hmm. So this number may be adjusted. Interesting, and Tim, you sent this to me as well. In Russia, The Eternals is going to be rated R.
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S., it's having a PG-13 rating for fantasy violence and action, some language, and brief sexuality.
Ooh.
I feel like, and I wonder if with Disney Plus, we'll see more of these longer ones. Is there for lack of a better term, there's some jealousy of, oh, these shows and characters get 6 hours and we only get like 2 minutes.
there may very well be. So this 2 hour and 36 minute runtime, this actually came from a Russian pop culture news source. Mm-hmm. And no one can actually confirm where they got it from. So it's kind of rumor, but no one's actually saying like, yeah, no, that's wrong. Right. And around about when tickets go on sale, either on or before is when you actually do have run times, because movie theaters need to know the run times before they can actually advertise the tickets. Yeah. So that's that. PG-13 doesn't entirely surprise me. I mean,
yeah,
PG-13 is the majority of MCU films now, right?
Right. Yep. I know this because anytime students ask me, can we watch Avengers? And I'm like, no, you're under 13. Not as much as I would love to watch it with you. I'm not going to be that person who, you know, shows it. And they're like, my parents let me watch it. I'm like, that's your parents? That's cool. I can't take that responsibility unless I send out, you know, a message home to be like, we're watching this movie. Are you okay with it? And I'm like, nope, I can't do that. So I'm not going to. And the R rating for Russia doesn't surprise me either, because sometimes in the US, at least I know with US and Canada, there are different rating systems.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming it's the same thing in Russia. So that's probably why it's an R and maybe not a PG-13.
Yeah. And also to be clear, it's their equivalent of our R.
Right.
Yeah.
Whatever the heck it is that they happen to call it. But yeah.
Alan Taylor, the director of Thor 2, says he wants to make a Snyder cut of the film. Says Marvel Studios decided mid-production to change the tone of the film, which caused significant changes in post-production. And he regrets that the movie he made is not what was released to the public. And honestly, I would be okay to see the movie that he wanted to release, because as much as I don't think, for me, Thor 2 is not the worst Marvel movie. I know for some people it is, but for me, it's not the worst one, but I would still love to see what it could have been. And I'm hoping maybe the original that Alan Taylor was releasing might have had more for Jane to do than just be like, you know, a vessel for the ether kind of thing. It would have been nice to see more of her, maybe see more of Renee Russo as Frigga, because she definitely deserves a lot more time in the Thor universe, because we got to see more of her in Endgame, and it felt like we got to see more of her. We got to see more of her character. So it would be nice to see if we got any more of that in his Tom Taylor version.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we've seen the Snyder cut. Tim, I'm guessing you are, like me, excited to see Stallone's, I guess it's the Stallone cut of Rocky IV, which he's done.
I don't know if I heard about this.
Oh, Tim. Yeah, no, he's been working on this
really
for years. I think it's coming, actually, it might be coming out this year.
Is it going to be on HBO Max with the other Rocky stuff, or no?
I don't know. But I mean, it's, you know, from what he has said, you know, he was never entirely happy with for this additional footage and everything else. This he feels is more close to the movie he really wanted to make. So I'm not surprised. This seems to be the thing to do for directors who either weren't happy or want to make tweaks to things. I think they're fun.
Yeah.
As long as, and I say this with a huge grain of salt, knowing when it comes to things like, you know, Thor 2 or even the Snyder Cut, as long as folks realize it ain't going to change anything. Like, don't then want the Taylor version of the MCU because it changed so much of this and everything else. So take it as a what if.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
and so then go from there, but don't. And that's the problem with folks in the Snyder cut of like, oh, reestablish the Snyderverse. and everything else. They moved on from that.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that, most likely. So take it as a, hey, and actually the Snyder Cut I found pretty boring too. So,
I mean, this is not a Snyderverse conversation, but I agree there were parts of it. I think I liked it more than the original because the original was so bad. But there were parts I was like, that could have been a 2-minute clip. That could have been 5 minutes. It didn't have to be 10 minutes. Like, there was so much slow-mo that didn't need to happen. So, yeah, I agree with that.
It was exhaustively long, but it was better than the original. The thing is, and kind of building on what you were saying, John, fundamentally, DC can do this because canon and continuity are very, very loosely used terms over there.
Yes.
And that's simply the way that they decide to do it. That gives the writers and directors a lot of freedom to play in that universe and tell all sorts of versions of their stories, which is really cool. The MCU is very hung up on canon.
Yeah.
So I don't ever see Disney, Marvel Studios, Kevin Feige, Bob Chapek, name whoever you want, ever green lighting a re-release, a recut re-release of this movie. Now, I'll say I actually, back when the movie originally came out, did not like it.
You're right.
I think last maybe a year and a half ago or so, I rewatched it. Mm-hmm. And when you rewatch it in the context of basically the first Thor movie, the second Thor movie, Avengers, Ragnarok, Infinity War and Endgame, mm-hmm. and you realize that Thor 2 is actually a more critical component to that story arc than pretty much any of the other solo character movies.
Yeah.
It fits really well. There are still certainly issues with the movie, but as part of a broader arc, it does really well.
Yeah.
I will say Alan Taylor, and for folks who aren't familiar with him, the guy has a seriously good filmography. HBO likes the guy. He's done a huge range of things. So he's done episodes from Sex and the City, Rome, The Sopranos, and Game of Thrones, which is probably what he's most noted for. He also did several episodes of Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. He did a Boardwalk Empire. He was the director for Terminator Genesis, which... he's got good stuff behind him. He had a lot of this stuff behind him when he went into Dark World. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were kind of expecting something that was more Game of Thrones-ish.
Right.
When he came into this. And apparently that's kind of what got softened. Mm-hmm. In reading like his full statement on this whole thing, that's kind of what it was. So... yeah, whatever.
And just going back really quickly to what you were saying, Tim, with being part of the canon, I don't think, even if they did re-release Thor 2, I don't think it would be that different to kind of reset the entire Marvel, like the MCU. I think there would just be more additions, that maybe there might be the tone would change a little bit, but I think it would still fit within the MCU timeline. Because based off of what you said, the MCU is, Marvel is very particular about the canon and the timeline. So I don't think it would be that much of a change. Whereas with the DCEU, they're really, it's just all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. John.
So for Disney Plus Day, November 12th, apparently, we're going to get the release of a special yet to be named, which will celebrate the MCU on Disney Plus with an exciting look towards the future. So as we talked about, I think it was last week, looking at some content on Disney Plus, which I, Kevin, thank you for listening and saying you're going to put some of it on Disney Plus. I didn't need the 7 text messages about it, but that's fine. Yeah. Disney said that it would like to thank subscribers by premiering tons of exclusive content on Disney Plus Day, which is, again, great to see. Bob Chapek has said, quote, a grand scale celebration of our subscribers.
Sweet.
So with Disney Plus Day streaming on Disney Plus instead of having premium content for investors, what do you guys, I mean, that's how it's been in the past. What do you think?
It kind of makes sense that if they're going to call it Disney Plus Day, that it is not only, you know, available on Disney Plus, but which obviously does make it about the subscribers, like Bob Chapek said. So that was one thing that never actually connected in my head, that, hey, they're calling it Disney Plus Day. And if they just make it this otherwise streaming thing with investor premium content, then it really isn't about Disney Plus. And so that didn't click in my head until I came across this particular thing. So
especially if the reason why they're so popular is because the subscribers that they have, if there were no subscribers, they wouldn't really have all of this Disney Plus stuff or, you know, wanting to put out more information or getting people excited about stuff. They'd be like, yeah, it's just about the investors. That's it. But because of these subscribers, they can be that famous or that popular.
And I mean, and to a degree, the subscribers are the investors.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, 100%. I invest 19 bucks a month.
Right?
Yeah. Well, and the thing that, also Disney Plus for a good part of the pandemic was paying the bills for Disney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
When they had to shut the parks down, movie theaters were shut down. Basically, all their revenue sources were shut down, which didn't mean that they were no longer spending money, because they still were. Things were still in production, even though it was disrupted. They're still having to pay bills. They're paying employees. They're doing all that stuff. So the release, the timing of the release of Disney Plus, which was a few months prior to the pandemic, was pretty serendipitous, because it really remained steady income for them and actually an increasing income. And I think a lot of that was due to the pandemic, because it's obviously people great programming that they have, but also because a lot of people were home and they weren't going to movies and they wanted to see stuff.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and they had the ability to see, I mean, the number of people I know that watched, whether it be Star Wars, the MCU, both, start to finish, because they had that time. And it's something they'd always wanted to do.
Yeah. Here it was all in one place. All they had to do was subscribe, and they had access to all of it, except for, Spider-Man movies and Hulk.
And, for people with kids, all of the Disney catalog was on Disney Plus.
So,
you're at home with your kids, what do? Throw on some Disney Plus and there you go.
Yep.
I mean, and then add in, it was a family event for us watching Hamilton.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. For somebody who didn't get to watch Hamilton, even though I booked time to see it twice and both of those showings got canceled, it was a blessing to be able to watch on Disney Plus.
Sure. So, it definitely makes sense. And as we mentioned, Shang-Chi will be released on Disney Plus on that day as well, November 12th. I'm looking forward to all the stuff that we're going to get. We're going to have that special that you mentioned, John. We're going to have Shang-Chi. And I'm interested in seeing what other content. I mean, it seems there's going to be some kind of scripted content, probably pre-recorded, that they're going to put up there, and that will give us, you know, presentations by all the Disney various studio presidents, just like they have done on Investors Days, and running trailers and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to what they do and how they structure it and when it's going to be. Is it all, is it going to be a 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time release like they do for everything else? You know, if so, I'm probably going to have to take at least half the day off to watch all this stuff. So, you know,
I was going to make an insensitive comment on 12th, 1st, the 11th, at least in the States. Because for some folks, the 11th is a holiday.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, not for us here.
I
mean, for government, I think government employees, they have November 11th off.
I saw a funny meme earlier today. It was, you know, basically any other day of the week, you know, having to get up to go to work and, you know, show to person stick figure or whatever, you know, just kind of like, you know, dragging butt. But then it was like on the day of a new Disney Plus release, they're like up early and excited. And I'm like, yeah, I that's absolutely, that's me. So let's see other related news here. I did a bit of an informal poll over in Discord, and just a reminder again, the Escape Hatch Discord channel. You can search it in Discord. You can go to the Ram Chatter website and access it from there. And it is not Random Chatter's Discord channel, but it is where we have a lot of our stuff, along with various other topics. So I did a kind of informal poll in there asking people what their favorite live action MCU series was. Most people voted Loki.
Not surprising.
Is it because it is the best? Is it a recency bias? Don't know.
I was going to say probably a good chunk of recency bias.
Yeah. WandaVision, though, which was the first released one, came in second, a fairly close second. Yeah. And we did have some people that said they wanted to vote for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which was nice. And of course, it is, you know, we've had the discussion before. It's not really part of MCU canon. But hey, I totally get it, you know, enjoying the series, and it was great. I mean, obviously ran for a number of years. Speaking of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Chloe Bennett, who played Quake, a.k.a. Daisy, took to Instagram a few days ago and put up a series of videos vehemently denying her involvement in the Secret Invasion series, which has kind of been a rumor kicking around. It's one of those things. I like Chloe Bennett. I love the character that she did in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'd love to see more of her. Her measure of denial was kind of like a, hey, you're protesting an awful lot for something that, you know, maybe, quote, doesn't matter to you because you're not involved in it. Right. So, you know, I think we've learned to be wary of these denials when actors come out with them, that it might be a little bit too much of a denial, that she's just kind of trying to cover up and deflect and she really isn't it, or she genuinely isn't. I got to say, though, I think genuinely she is not involved in it. Right. For as much as I said, I'd love to see her.
Yeah. That's the thing. Anytime any of these characters or people are like, yeah, no, I'm not in that, I'm like, I'm just going to wait and see.
Yeah.
And because I'm like, we've heard like Loki, there's no Loki season two. And then bam, we're going to Loki season two. So honestly, I'm just like, I'll wait and see. And if you're in it, cool. If you're not, that's fine too.
Yeah, I agree. Let's see here. So we do have another thing that kind of goes a little bit more to speculation and rumor here. This is a little bit of insider jargon coming from or in regard to Armor Wars. Now, this first item here, not really a stretch, kind of seems pretty realistic that there's going to be a big focus on Rhodey. I don't think anyone's surprised. I mean, he is basically the Iron Man era parent.
Yeah.
And this specifically does say the Stark family in the aftermath of Tony's death. So are we going to get Pepper and what's her name? Daughter?
Morgan.
Yeah. I don't know. It does go on here that it's kind of an interesting direction to the series, which I suppose can make sense because the Armor Wars storyline itself, which we've talked about before on the show, there's not enough context of where and when and how that whole conflict exists. So the statements that are being made here kind of do add some context to it that I think is kind of interesting. It goes on to say that Rhodey is going to establish the West Coast Avengers, which will feature the return of Vision and some other familiar faces, as well as Zeke Stane, Ezekiel Stane, who is Obadiah Stane's son. That does, in fact, prompt itself pretty well to Armor Wars, even though Zeke had nothing to do with the Armor Wars comic book series.
It ties to...
Yeah, this ties quite a bit. Exactly. Now, for those who aren't really familiar with the West Coast Avengers, this was kind of Marvel's way of getting out of New York City. To basically have, another offshoot, another break up the group of heroes, have another team, have their own adventures. This was also a team generally that has always kind of been like damaged Avengers. Not necessarily that they were the second rate Avengers, because they did have, they did have some A-line Avengers there, but it was very often like someone like had some kind of personal crisis or they were in legal trouble and they quote went into hiding by just simply going to the West Coast Avengers. There was always like weird things in terms of the storylines of the characters that were there. But yeah, by and large, as John said, they oftentimes did kind of end up as the B team. The initial West Coast Avengers team was Hawkeye, Mockingbird, who at the time was married to Hawkeye, Wonder Man, Tigra, and Iron Man as Rhodey. So this is before Rhodey became War Machine. I can't remember exactly what was going on with Tony Stark. Either he was dead or he wasn't dead or he was retired or he was drying up or whatever.
Yeah.
But Rhodey put on the suit. So there you go. Yeah. So what do you guys think about this? If particularly this whole West Coast Avengers thing, do you guys think this is a good move?
No, because it's not West Coast Avengers. The show's Armor Wars.
Right, yeah.
Now, if it leads to the establishment of the West Coast Avengers and that's the season finale, I can stomach it. But I mean, Vision doesn't have a huge role in... what would be Armor Wars. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a big connection to Rhodey.
I kind of feel the same way. Like, I'd rather see the Armor Wars and not the B Avengers at the moment. If they, like John said, if they make it an end credit thing or a season finale where they all come in, then I think that would be pretty cool, but I'd like to see Armor Wars, especially just being able to give Rhodey some time in the spotlight, because we always saw him as a secondary character to Tony, and it would be nice to have him fully take on, a more prominent role, and being able to see what he's capable of doing as a Iron Man or an Iron Man successor, if that's what he's going to be, or just how he would take it on his own, similar to what we saw with Cap and Sam, and how it showed him taking over as Cap and coming into that role on his own. I would like to be able to see that for Rhodey. And I think
And keep in mind, we will have Riri Williams in this as well.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's where I'd like to see more of the focus in, yeah. and her then tie into Black Panther too.
Yeah. And they deserve their own story and their own moment in the spotlight. I feel like having everyone else be a part of it would take away from that main storyline.
And seeing, I mean, the last time we saw Rhodey was him asking Sam, you know, about yeah. giving up the shield and right. that yeah. whole process. I think him kind of serving at, you know, in a Clint-like mentorship to Riri makes sense.
Yeah.
Given his character.
Yeah.
And also consider that it may not, well, I mean, it I guess a lot of it kind of is in terms of the leadership, but also that, you know, the physical manifestation that the Iron Man armor and the War Machine armor are obviously really similar.
Right.
Kind of going with what you mentioned, John, that, you know, we saw Rhodey in Falcon and Winter Soldier because he was there talking to Sam about taking up the mantle of Captain America. Rhodey's kind of in the same situation. Not that he's going to yeah. become Iron Man. He's always going to stay War Machine as far as we know.
Right.
But he's basically in those shoes.
Yeah.
He's in those iron shoes. So
iron boots.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are certainly some similarities there. Along with, you know, some speculation on top of the speculation, does kind of go to that we may see in Armor Wars the West Coast Avengers being established, but we won't really see them fully in action, but that may be the next Avengers film, the next Maybe. Avengers full ensemble yeah. film. And I think that you know, we obviously know we're going to get the Fantastic Four. We know that we're going to get the X-Men in some shape or form. Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be done after the third film.
Yeah.
We kind of need another team.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In the MCU, it works really well. In the comics, it's always worked really well to assemble yeah. these people and have them work together as a team. And yeah, we've talked about, you know, Young Avengers. I still have yet to be really excited about Young Avengers. I like the individual characters mm-hmm. that would be part of that. I just don't know if I don't know.
Yeah.
But I could see and we just called the West Coast the B team. I could mm-hmm. see a West Coast Avengers and a Young Avengers operating out of New York City.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which seems like where, you know, and historically the main team has operated out of, but give them more, I don't want to call them street level villains, but, you know, they don't need to deal with the intergalactic base right. threats or yeah. the Ultrons or things like yeah. that, but there's yeah. plenty of other villains they can deal yep. with.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, so obviously we'll see what happens. And as time moves forward, we'll get more and more information on this. Hey, who knows? Maybe even on Disney Plus Day, we'll get a little bit of a look into what's going on with Armor Wars. So, folks, that is going to do it for episode 188. Please do join us later in the week for episode 189. We are going to profile Carnage, who obviously is a focal point of the Venom sequel. While not properly MCU, still fun movies, so we figured we'd cover it. Folks, thanks very much for joining us for this episode of Guardians of the MCU. Take care.